You're listening to Radio Influence.
You are sitting ringside with David Penzer on Radio Influence.
Welcome to another edition of Sitting Ringside. This is David Penzer, and we appreciate you tuning in and listening to this thing that we call a podcast each and every week. And if you want to hit us up on social media, you could hit me up at David Penzer, all one word, on Twitter, or at Penzer Ringside. You could email me at DavidPenzer@RadioInfluence.com. DavidPenzer@RadioInfluence.com. Love to hear from you. We got a special guest. I'm going to get right into him with him because I have a lot to talk to him about. And he is a great storyteller, somebody that I've wanted to have on this podcast since we started doing it. And he took a little time away from the wrestling business, but promised me that when he decided to come back around and do some appearances, that I would be the very first podcast he would do, and he's a man of his word. I look forward to talking to him, and I think it'll be a fantastic conversation. So, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, please welcome Elijah Burke, better known as the Pope. Ladies and gentlemen, when I got to go back to Impact Wrestling for a brief 6 months or so, one of the bright spots was getting to get to know a guy who I really didn't know all that well, and who is one of the classiest guys in the business. So classy that when he left Impact Wrestling, and I called him immediately, of course, touched base and asked him to be on my podcast, he said, "I'm not doing podcasts right now, but when I do, you'll be the first one I do." And by God, flu and all, the guy has kept his word, live from Clewiston, Florida, where he is getting ready to do a independent show as we tape this. Please welcome one of my favorite people from the last 6 months at Impact. The Pope is in the house. Elijah Burke, how you doing, my friend?
I am doing wonderful, Dave. I appreciate the great introduction there, man. Hell, what would Pope be without keeping his word? I was always brought up and taught that a man's word is his bond, and yes, sir, true to my word, here we are on your podcast, and we're gonna make it a good one, man.
Well, you're a class act, and one of some of my favorite times for the last little 6 months was and being in that little it's going to sound strange, being in that little washer and dryer closet, yeah. They called the announcer's dressing room, and before Josh would come in and kill the mood, we would get to hang out and tell some stories. So, hey, before I get into your career, funny thing that you're in Clewiston. And is the first place I ever was ever ring announced before. And when I was working with this company called the Global Wrestling Alliance, which was a local company down there in the late 80s. First place I ever ring announced. They said, come out to Clewiston and ring announce. Does it smell like sugar cane out there still?
Well, brother, right now at this point in time, Pope can't even smell it.
Oh, that's true.
And I'm not too sure I would want to. So, but, you know, I frequent Clewiston quite often with Fighting Evolution Wrestling. It's one of our stops almost every month, if you will. And we have a great time. We're out here. The fans are great. And the people are great. Just very laid back and very nice, man. So, yes, it's Clewiston.
You'll get a kick out of this, though. The main event of the show was Corporal Kirshner versus the Iron Sheik. And it was right after they were both fired from WWF at the time, so they were playing off that feud. And nobody had ever smartened me up, so I sort of knew what I sort of knew because I hung out at the wrestling school in Davie, Florida. So I sort of knew a little bit, but I didn't know, you know, were the guys that were enemies on TV, were they friends? I knew they didn't really hate each other, but were they friends? Did they just kind of like, you know, hey, how are you? And they went their separate way. You know, I was 18 years old. I had a lifelong wrestling fan. I had no idea. First, so Iron Sheik comes in the dressing room first, goes around everybody in the dressing room. How are you, sir? How are you, sir? How are you, sir? About 5 minutes later, Corporal Kirshner comes in, and they had this big hug, embrace, like, oh, how you been? You know, Sheik, you know, and all of a sudden, like, the light bulb finally, you know, was fully bright in my head. I finally understood the game that I was getting involved with, but it's funny that you're in Clewiston now, because that without Clewiston, I might not be I might be like waiting tables somewhere and not not to say that I'm not waiting tables now, but no, just kidding.
Are you still with Impact?
Oh, no. No, if I was with Impact, okay. I'd be taping right now. No, I don't. Last I heard, Jason, you know Jason James, right?
Yeah, they have him doing the announcement.
Yeah, that's what I heard. Since he's on the payroll anyway. Yeah, no, there were. I wish them the best, but they're and I'm I like I don't know about you. I like Scott D'Amore, but me and him go back 25 years. Where he actually used to pay me a booking fee for getting him booked in WCW, and it's about the only thing I have on him at this point to aggravate him. So I always bring it up when I can. But I wish them the best. They got rid of Bob Rowe. I don't know how much you follow. They got rid of Bob Rosen, who's did the ring for as long as it's been around, and they got rid of all the referees or the Hebners and Stifler, and part of that I think is for the good, because they were spending more than they were taking in. You can't run a business can't survive that way.
Right. But well, it's obviously it's certainly sad when you see so many of the long-time, employees, leaving the company for whatever reason, whether it's on their own or because they, were let go. Bob Rose and I just found out about that probably 2 weeks ago. He's a good guy, man. And he's been very loyal. I don't know what the reason being that they decided to move away from him, but the man had his crew and he had it together. So, that was kind of sad to hear that. Sometimes you can be sad about other people's loss over your own, especially when that you're in a good place or you're in a certain place in your life.
Yeah.
But I think it's also a testament to the person who feels for someone else more than they actually does for themselves. And Pope's just been a person that just cares about good people. And Bob has always been a good person. And he was always friendly and then did whatever I know personally, whatever I asked of Bob Rosen while I was out there at the announce table and before I even got to the announce table, he was always hands-on and he made it happen ASAP. And I know he was like that when it came to Impact Wrestling in general. So I hope that I know he'll continue to build his reins and do his stuff, and I hope he's well taken care of and in a good place.
I think he's actually in Texas right now for Aero Lucha with the Harris Brothers. So I think he's going to pick up with them right where he left
Harris
off.
Brothers.
So.
Yeah.
Hey, that does make you very popular on Twitter if you say that. So you better watch out. I get attacked for that.
But well, you know what? Pope certainly no. I don't look to be the popular one. That's for sure. Hell, I mean, I think at this state of the game, you just got to say what you feel and stand behind it. That's the key. Say what you feel, mean what you say, and stand on it. Stand behind it. I mean. Look at your president, Donald Trump. But that's another story. We don't want to get into
that.
We don't talk about that
person in this podcast.
Yeah.
No, we don't. Believe me, if we did, I don't know if I'd have a wrestling show to talk about. But we're gonna get back to this shit. We're gonna get back to this shithole of a podcast we call City Ringside. How about that? You couldn't have set me up better for that.
Right, knock it out of the park, buddy.
We got some chemistry going. We'll get back to TNA because I definitely want to talk to you about that. But I want to go as I usually do, go backwards before we move ahead. I know that you grew up in Jacksonville and you were very involved in boxing as an amateur in Jacksonville. Is it true that you only have one loss and that loss was a DQ? And tell me about how you got involved in boxing and how that came about.
The one loss is true. I was trying to finish out a quest, if you will, to get 100 wins. I was doing amateur boxing in Jacksonville. I was doing the Tough Man competitions. I think you guys may remember that. It was something that caught on like wildfire. It caught on before the whole UFC stuff caught on like it has.
Yeah.
Tough Man competition and fighting was something that it was.
Justin Roberts was the first ever guest on the show about six, seven months ago when we started. And, he gave us the whole inside skinny on the Tough Man deal because he used to – I don't know if he ever announced any of the ones that you were on, but he used to be one of the ring announcers for Tough Man.
Yeah, I wouldn't know if he did or didn't, but I can tell you one thing. Everybody and their mama who had some money, much like independent wrestling. They were lining up trying to start their own, and they were promoting their own and whatnot. And I would fight at three different places. One was called Crazy Horse. One was the main place was called Club 5 and 5 Points in Jacksonville, Florida, and the other one was called Edge, which was located in the south side of town of Jacksonville. And basically, I would fight one Friday night, I would fight one Sunday night, and one Saturday night. And so I got into the tough man aspect because there's something called Guns and Hoses with the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office and the firemen of Jacksonville. It's a charity event where firefighters and officers compete one night only, and it was square off. It's a team of officers versus a team of firefighters, and whatever team comes out with the most wins, they win the trophy and the crown for that year. And man, it started off as something that was held at the University of North Florida. I mean, we would draw. I'm talking about a crowd. I mean, who don't want to show up to see their favorite officer, especially if he got arrested by him, get beat up?
Sure.
You know? So the crowds will turn out in great numbers, so much so now that it's held in the Jacksonville Memorial Coliseum. That's how much it has grown.
Wow.
But I wanted to do it. They came to me, yeah, brother. I mean, the last time I went there, they inducted me into the Hall of Fame, and it was just looking at the crowd, I'm going to myself, why couldn't, you know, my company at the time come and put this many people in here, you know? But that goes without saying at this point. But I wanted to be a part of it. They came to me and asked me to be a part of it. I wanted to be a part of it. And I said, shoot, I got to start training. I don't want to step out here and do this and be a failure at it. So Tough Man was going on at that very same time. So to prepare for that event, me and another officer, we signed up under aliases at Club 5 in 5 Points of Jacksonville, Florida. We used aliases because we didn't want to put down that we were officers or whatnot, because that's, you know, I don't think we were allowed to do it anyways.
Sure.
At the time.
Yeah.
But we went down, we got in the ring, we did something called Thunderdome where it was 2-on-2. One person starts first for two members of the team fight for 2 minutes. Then they tag out. The next two get in for 2 minutes. And if everybody survived those first and second round, now it's Thunderdome, where it's basically 2-on-2 in the ring at the same time. That was my very first match.
And that's 100% shoot?
100% shoot, brother.
Wow.
100% shoot. And I understood why they called it Thunderdome after that was over with. Because if you didn't have eyes in the back of your head, you know, if I dropped my opponent, which I did, I ran over to help my partner. And I was able to, you know, get his opponent. And that's kind of how it went. And so I became a fixture in Club 5 after that very first fight that I had. They wanted me back. They loved to entertain. Because, you know, all I wanted to do was go out there and entertain Dave. That's
sure.
All I wanted to do. I don't care really about beating people up or getting beat up. I just wanted to entertain. And that's what I went out there and did. So they talked me into coming back. And they said, we're going to build this around you. We're going to do posters. And they did. They had me up. They had me up in the movie, you know, rack, whatever, you know, what they put the movie posters in. They printed posters of me.
Wow.
And several other main guys, and they had us up, showcased us on the outside of the building, like Friday night. And this woman named, she was Laura, she had a vision, she was over the fight night, and she pushed it. So long story short,
what was the alias? What was the alias?
The Ayatollah. The Ayatollah.
Sort of a prelude to the Pope a little bit.
Right. And they asked why Ayatollah, and I said they, you know, immediately they connected to the Ayatollah, you know, over in that other realm and the religion. I said, no, the Ayatollah basically means king of.
Sure.
So whatever I choose to be the king of, that's what I am. So I'm the king of fight night. And I went on to, after doing that training, you know, get my wind up and fighting, I went on into the Guns and Hoses bout, and I became dominant in it. I would go out to the ring, and I mean, Ric Flair type style robes, okay? And there's a cool story behind one of my robes. I hope I can tell it really quick.
Sure.
But I had my robes made custom. Custom-made robes, brother. And while it wasn't $15,000 like the Nature Boy, it cost me a grand or so. But I had them made, and my first robe, my auntie was a seamstress. She's a professional seamstress. I drew it out, showed her what I wanted, gave her examples of Ric Flair's black and white robe that was very popular, especially this WWE time. And on the back of that robe, I put, you know, N-A-T, period, boy. I wanted to go out there as a Nature Boy. I wanted that on the back of my robe. You know, huge wrestling fan, right? That's all I want to do is entertain. And so when the robe was complete, I walked in, I looked at the robe like, oh my gosh, this is great. And then I turned the robe around, and the jewels on the back of the robe that spells out the name, guess what it said? It said Nat Boy, just what I wrote. She didn't put Nature Boy. She put Nat Boy. And I'm going, oh, no. But I'm like, you know what? Whatever. It works. It still works. They'll get it. Now, here's the ironic part and the crazy part, the good part. The sheriff's name at the time was the first black sheriff of Jacksonville, Florida. His name was Nathaniel Glover.
Ah,
and for short,
I see where this is going.
Nat. They call him Nat Glover. So when I came out there with that robe on and I did that twirl, while I'm the only person, now we were not allowed to go out there to the ring other than to wear your helmet, your tank top, and your shorts. Of course, I throw caution to the wind. I don't care. It's my interest. I'm fighting. They want me to fight. I'm going to go out there wearing what I want to wear. I was the only person for the first couple of years to go out there doing it. Now, everybody's tried to add some, you know, add their own little element to the interest. I went and brought a smoke machine. I had two managers to walk me out to the ring. Brother, I brought the championship belts to the ring. And when I walked out there and I twirled around and it said, Nat Boy, all of the undersheriffs and the lieutenants and everybody, they went crazy. And they were hitting the sheriff saying, that's your boy, man. He's representing you. Yeah, so after that was over with, the sheriff wanted to personally, you know, shake my hand, good job. And then I ran into a problem some couple of months down the road. I ran into some problems at work. I just went and saw him, and he took care of it.
Now, I'm assuming at this point the secret was out that you were a police officer using an alias.
For fight night. Yeah, a lot of the guys that would be at Club 5, a lot of them had just got out during the middle of the week and showed up Friday anyways, but none of them were crazy enough to step into the ring with me. And luckily, I didn't want any trouble as far as being on the outside, with civilians or whatnot at that time. So, a lot of the guys would just come up. Officer Burke, yeah, good stuff, man. I see you in there doing your thing. Good stuff. I'm thinking about getting in there too. But, nobody ever did anything crazy. But, yeah, the secret was out. All of the officers would come down and watch at that point, watch me fight at fight night, because they had officers there anyway. So they would come and just watch and be just as rowdy and crazy, off-duty, of course, as crazy as the drunk people that was there. So half of them became drunk. So it was something else.
Do you have any video that exists? Is there any video exists of this?
Yes, there was a video online when they inducted me into the Hall of Fame. It was actually on YouTube. Of some people had some of the videos of some of the fights, and they sent them in for a nice little clip to be edited together that we did when I got ready to go into the Jacksonville Sheriff's Hall of Fame thing, the Boxing Hall of Fame in Florida. Yeah, there's some.
So if any of the listeners wanted to find it, what would they put in? The Ayatollah?
I would go to Pope TV for you. Pope TV, the letter 4, and you on YouTube. That's the YouTube channel, and it should be up there. Pope TV for you. If it's not up there, then it's probably been removed. But follow that channel anyways. There's some good stuff.
Absolutely, absolutely. So you did the amateur boxing, and then that turned into the the fight night stuff. Just to go back for a second, any thought ever to go pro in boxing, or was that just something that you did as a
never?
No thought.
Brother, I would go out there to the ring sometimes on those Friday nights. Listen, one time I had a church service. I finished church service on a Sunday evening. Went out to be a guest, a VIP guest at Edge 2000, I think it was called at the time, or Leopard Lounge, whatever the hell it was called. But I left church service, went out there with my Versace shirt on, my slats, and my dress shoes. And I'm sitting in the VIP with my girl. And one of the guys, they were doing Thunderdome, and one of the normal guys who fought, who was a mainstay for fight night, his name was Gator. He was a really rough, rugged redneck that can take a pounder and keep on ticking. And it was going to be Gator and this, I kid you not, 300-plus-pound white guy against another individual and a 400-pound black guy. No exaggeration whatsoever. And that was the matchup. And the 400, almost 400-pound black guy tagged on the over 200-pound white guy for just a minute or so, and that guy quit. And so all of a sudden, the announcer's in the ring. He's hyping it up because it's going to be, since his partner don't want to continue, it's a two-on-one. That's the way Thunderdome works. It's a two-on-one now.
Right.
And all of a sudden, they turn to me as I'm sitting over in the VIP section, and he goes, "Oh, the Ayatollah is here." And I just left church, brother. And all of a sudden, everybody starts cheering and, you know, chanting for me to get up and help the guy. And I take off my little Versace shirt and I get in the ring. And unbeknownst to a lot of people, that big guy, that big 400-pound almost black guy, he swung wild, but he grazed me. He grazed me on my head and I saw stars.
Wow.
And no one ever knew it. No one ever knew it until now.
That sounds like a little bit of an angle. That wasn't an angle. That just happened organically. You're telling me that they just the whole audience looked at you, and
I'm telling you,
the Ayatollah came in.
It was crazy.
I'm surprised. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Yeah, I was gonna say it could have been an angle, but I'm sure if it was an angle, that the big guy wouldn't have wanted to go down. He wouldn't have wanted to take the fall when I touched him on the chin the way I did. So
I'm surprised the 400-pound guy didn't blow up.
Yeah, a left hand to the chin, and it was over, man. Big guy went tumbling down like a sack of potatoes. A straight left jab to the chin. That was all it took.
Oh, wow.
But I was ducking and dodging because he was trying to take my head off.
I hope that video exists. So before we move on to your foray in pro wrestling, what's the craziest story that you're allowed to tell about your days in the police force?
I mean, how crazy you want it? You want some unbelievable crazy stuff? You want some life saving stuff? You want some grotesque stuff? I mean, there's a lot of.
Hey, I got all night.
Well, here's one. When I was in when I was working in jail, I remember a guy wanting some really bad attention, and he decided to stand up on the top balcony of the dorm that he was in and threaten to jump. And in those type of situations, there's two things you can do. You can panic, or you can just say, "Okay, jump." you know, and dare them to do it or whatnot. We send everybody to their cells at that time. We locked down the dorm and we try to, you know, use our verbal skills to talk the guy down, and he jumped.
Oh!
He jumped. And he jumped from the top balcony of that dorm all the way down to the floor, and his foot, the bone from his ankle, was all the way throughout, you know, just broken and all the way out of the skin. His foot was mangled and hanging in the opposite direction. And he sat there and he screamed. And I just told him, "Well, you know what? You're just going to have to scream. There's nothing we can do right now. You know, the paramedics are on the way." And
That was it. That was about the only comfort that could be given to him at that time, because there was nothing we can do.
That sounds like
and make sure that.
That sounds like a Sid Vicious spot I saw. That sounds like a Sid Vicious spot I saw one time. But that's a whole nother story.
Oh gosh. Oh Lord. I don't know if that's well, I don't know. But this one came through, brother. Blood was you saw this one, blood was going, and there was another time a guy tried to jump off the rail. He was in a suicide dorm and he tried to jump off the rail, and I was able to catch him by his shirt as he was hanging, and he was still trying to get out of the shirt so that he could fall. And I was able to, I was hanging over the rail. Somebody had my foot or my leg holding me, and I was holding him, and I had to pull them back up to safety. And then the darn clown went into the cell. Once we got everything secure, the next day I get there, I got to watch him now. And he's in the cell, and he got a blanket wrapped around his neck trying to choke himself.
Jeez.
Oh man, I could go on and on. One time we found the body under a house, and we had to go under there, and you can't move the body immediately because the crime scene and everything has to get there and investigate and whatnot.
Like a dead body?
Maggots and everything.
Oh!
Yeah.
Wow.
Bloated. Yeah. Pus. Maggots. Yeah. It was crazy, Dave.
Do you ever get used to that?
No, especially the smell, the stench. No, you never get used to it. If you get used, some people say they get used to it, but I don't really believe it. If you get used to it, you kind of dehumanize yourself, if I could use that term. You just not. I don't know. You can't be a human and say that you're used to that.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I totally understand. I have a 22-year-old, soon to be 23-year-old son who's trying to find his way in life, and I suggested that he might want to, because he's in good shape. He played Division III football, and suggested he might want to, be a police officer. And he said, "Dad, I can't handle all that stuff. I can't even, he'd get freaked out if his mom, threw up or something. He'd like be freaked out for like an hour. I remember when he was young, she's puking, Dad, she's puking." And I know that that's much more than anybody who tuned into this podcast ever wants to hear, but but I'm just saying he couldn't handle it, and he knew he couldn't handle it, so he decided not to do it. But so at some point you decide you're going to be a pro wrestler. How did that come about? Who'd you train with? And how soon did, because I don't remember you doing a lot of indies, so you must have got picked up real quick by WWE.
Never did.
Yeah.
I never did, Dave. I never did. The only time I did indies was in between my WWE and TNA. Those were my first couple of shots. I didn't do much then. And then after TNA, the first time is when I, did a handful more of indies. And I can literally almost name every place I've been. Gosh, man, because I just never been too comfortable dealing with the BS that comes with, some of the people that bring, want to bring you in, and
sure,
and you agree to something, then they start trying to talk you down off of it, or I don't know, it's a shady stuff out there. I just rather not deal with. I'm just happy that I I just chose to, during my time with the E and with TNA / Impact Wrestling, I just decided to make wise decisions with what I made, so that I wouldn't have to be out here trying to hustle too hard on the indie scene. But anyways, back to the wrestling part, Dave. It is so funny. Before the boxing thing even happened, now I've been watching wrestling since I was a kid, sitting on my dad's knee. As far back as I can remember, sitting at his feet, while he was watching NWA on Saturday mornings. And we just love wrestling. And I tell the story all the time. Dusty Rhodes was my hero, the American Dream. And a lot of people would ask me why as I was coming up. And I would tell them, they just didn't understand the reach that the American Dream had, whether it was by his intent or not. The American Dream was to
to us, he was the closest thing to a black champion that we had at that time. And when we looked up to Dream as that. A funny story, when the Dream was wrestling the Coliseum, the Jacksonville Memorial Coliseum at the time, the old Coliseum,
right.
My uncle thought the Dream was racist because he beat up a black guy. So as the Dream was leaving, he jumped on his back. Believe it or not, wow. Hopped over the rail and jumped on the Dream. Yeah.
Was it Ernie Ladd? Was it Ernie Ladd?
You know what? It probably was, bro. I'm really not sure right now. I'm really not sure.
Yeah.
You know, well, my uncle's up almost 70 now, so it probably was. If it wasn't Ernie, it probably was just Rocky King, just a little kill. Rocky King or Pistol Pass, you know, one of them.
Rocky
one
King,
of
man.
Mainstays.
Did you ever meet Rocky King?
I would love to meet Rocky King. I believe back in 2012, 13, I saw him at the NWA convention in Charlotte, wherever, in North Carolina. I may have saw him there, but I'm unsure. And if it wasn't there, then it may have been in New Orleans for Mid-South, for something they did to honor Mid-South. But I want to say I saw him, and if I didn't saw him, it's just I probably ran across him. Stuff of him on YouTube that I was watching because the guy's still in great shape.
He was a character. If I owned a wrestling promotion, I would book you and I would make Rocky like your like sidekick, like sort of like Ralphus, you know, not Ralphus, but sort of like your sidekick. Cause he's an interesting guy, very nicest guy in the world, and God bless Pez. Pez worked his butt off to do whatever they asked him to do, and he, you know, left us too soon. As somebody who grew up in Florida watching wrestling, anybody who grew up in Florida, no matter what your skin color was, the Dusty Rhodes was your hero. For me, I know you got to work with him, and I got to work with him. So it was one of the cooler things that you know I could tell. You know, even if nobody cares, I think it's a big deal, you know, from, you know, cheering on Dusty Rhodes in the Miami Beach Convention Center to being able to work under him.
It was
awesome. And
so check this out. Me and a friend, I'm straight out of high school. I'm in corrections. Me and a friend, we had been talking about training for wrestling for the longest. Of course, we were in the backyard and in the pool, doing our own thing, wrestling-wise. Excuse me. And so, me and him, you know, using the magazines, you know, we would get the wrestling magazine, and in the back of it, it would have the fucking conservatory.
Right.
So I'm talking to my friend. He was, you know, he was a size 15, barefoot, walking redneck named Joe. Country Joe, but we called him.
Country
we called
Joe.
Him Chris Anderson. He was a big Arn Anderson fan, and he was my best friend, and still is my very, very, very good friend to this day. And we were going to go down to the fucking conservatory, but you know how it is when it comes to something like that. Both parties got to ante up. You got to have your money. You got to sure. You know, you got to really want this thing, and we could it just never seemed to like come to fruition. One day, I'm booking someone into the jail, okay? I'm booking somebody into the jail. Now, this is pre-internet like we have today.
Right.
We still had those yellow computers that had the little, you know, green writing on the screen.
Right.
I don't know how this happened. I'll never, ever forget it. Maybe we had just updated to new systems. I probably did. I don't know how it happened while I was booking. Waiting because the jail was full and the officers was waiting outside to bring more people in. And I was just in the control room, and all of a sudden, just like some gold sitting in the bottom of the river, I don't know, just straight across the stream came WWE official tryout camp. WWE official tryout. It came across the computer screen.
Wow.
And I'm going, what?
Wow.
I'm going, is this for real? Like, really? And so I clicked it. And when I clicked it, you know, it's first ever
OVW tryout, accepted 500 applicants. Only 100 will be chosen. I remember like it was yesterday. Only 100 will be chosen. And so I remembered it. I wrote everything down. I printed it out right then and there. And I went home. I got some promo stuff together. I took some of my material with Chris Anderson, my best friend Joe, some of the pictures that we had together. And I sent it off to OVW. And a month or so later, I got a letter back saying that you have been accepted into the OVW trial camp. And I remember opening that. When I got the letter, I was excited. I was my mom and dad was in the living room, and I opened the letter up, and I just lost my breath. I went running up and down the hallway, like just waving a paper. Wow. And my dad was going, "Boy, what's wrong with you?" And I couldn't breathe. I couldn't talk. And I was just accepted to a tryout camp. I didn't get a contract or anything. It was just the fact that I was accepted to the tryout camp.
Wow. And did Country Joe get accepted?
No, he never did it. Because Joe was not in shape. Joe was like, 260-270 pounds. Not athletic, not in shape, but a good guy. And
kind of like me.
He was the one I used to. I used to do a lot of stuff with Joe. It's a funny story. I'll tell you in a few. I know you'll have time to edit everything. But Joe and I, let me finish this because I don't want to get lost. So I got accepted. I went up. I took some time off from work. I took like a 2-week vacation from work. Went up to OVW for a week. I paid my money. Of course, you got to pay. Sure. Paid my money. I met Jim Cornette for the first time, which was a huge deal for me. Met my grandpa in this business, Danny Davis, the Wizard, if you will. Huge deal for me. And there were some other people there, like Nick Dinsmore and Rob Conway and those guys. And Muhammad Hassan. I'll never forget him. Muhammad Hassan. He had a nice run up there. In WWE before he left. But that was it. And I went up there, did the tryout for a week. That was in February. And then all of a sudden in June, that's when we got the call back. And Jimmy was on the phone. He said, "Hey, Elijah, I know you just bought your mom a house. I know you're taking care of your sister, kids, and whatnot. I know you got a good job to be a young man. I can't guarantee you a contract, but I can almost guarantee you if you come back up here and train, you'll get a contract. You look good. You got a good look. We can teach you. You didn't send pictures looking one way, and you got here looking another way." He just was going, and then he was really upset with, like, some of the guys that sent, like, five-year-old pictures, and when they got there, they looked nothing like the picture. So they brought me back, man, and that was in '03, and the rest is history. I trained for a year and a half in Ohio Valley Wrestling, and I think a little over a year later I was signed by WWE. So I never worked independent. I just went to OVW and I just learned. I worked my butt off and I learned my craft.
Is it true that during that time that they offered you a spot in the Spirit Squad and you turned it down?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, here's the thing about that a lot of people don't understand. And if they don't understand, then the hell with them. But I will say this so that they could understand. At that time, and even more so now, I'm a grown behind man. I wear size 12. And I make decisions that's best for me, what I'm comfortable with, and what I'm not comfortable with. Now, Vince McMahon, at the time of the conception of the Spirit Squad, Vince told all of us that this was going to be a huge money-making deal. Vince looked at all of us, myself, Ken Doan, Nick Nemeth, and the other Nick. Well, I can't remember his name. But it was going to be four of us, me, Ken Doan, Nick Nemeth, and the other guy that was from They're Tough Enough.
Right.
And Vince looked at us and he said, "This is my idea. And you're going to make a lot of money real fast." And that's what he told us. And sorry about the horrible voice there, but
he told us that, and of course everybody got excited. I wasn't as excited because, one, I didn't feel like that would be something that I could dig my teeth into. I didn't feel like I can go out there and properly give what Vince was requesting of the Spirit Squad. And if it was something that was going to be a first impression, then I wanted my first impression to be a good impression and not something that would not necessarily live up to the expectation of what the big man wanted. So Vince said, if you're not comfortable with it, he understands. You know, it's not a big deal. But he said, I just want to let you all know this is my idea, and you're going to work with me, hands on. And I went back to Vince, and I went back. John Laurinaitis took me back in there, and I said, I would like to respectfully. First, I told him I appreciate the opportunity, you know, how grateful I was for the opportunity to even be considered, you know. But I told him that I didn't feel like I could live up to it. But I wanted to respectfully, you know, request to be removed. And Vince freaking respected that. And he said, I appreciate your honesty. He said, we'll send you back down, and we'll find something else for you, and we'll bring you up later. And that was it. And he said, thank you for your honesty. And I got major heat for that, by the way. I got major heat from the boys. And from some top guys that was already up in the WWE, believe it or not.
Really?
You know, I remember, oh yeah, man, it was crazy. And one of the top guys, you know, when the developmental guys used to line up and shake hands and whatnot, you know, be respectful to the top guys. One of the top guys turned his back on me, turned away from me. I was like, is this a joke? Like, I didn't know what was going on. And I thought it was a rib or something. And he flat out told me, you said no. And I'm like, huh? You said no. You know, a lot of people say no and they're not here. They don't get a second chance. You said no. So he told me I'm going to have to prove myself. You know, you're going to have to prove yourself before I shake your hand. Okay. So I waited behind to talk to that certain individual after he got done doing his photo shoot and whatnot. And I wear size 12. I'm a grown behind man. And me being a man don't take a back seat to nobody. That includes politics, you know. And so I talked to him. I said, look, you got a problem with me taking care of myself and making the decision what's best for me? You know, I said no, but it was not respectfully. And that's what Vince wanted me to do. And Vince respected me more for that, more so to the fact that he brought me back up when I did come up. And luckily for me, when he brought me back up, man, I couldn't have expected I planned it out better, you know. I came up as the mouthpiece for Turkai. Turkai was being groomed for the Undertaker at WrestleMania. Too bad that didn't happen because I would have been on the outside and probably would have got a nice little choke slam myself from the Undertaker. But things didn't go as planned with that.
Not to mention a nice little payday.
Yeah, who are you kidding, man? So I was really hoping that everything worked out. But Turkai was he's such a nice, gentle beast, but a beast can be nice, a beast can be gentle, but guess what? A beast is still a beast. So you can play around with a bear all day long, but somehow, some way, if it's not attacking you, you're not gonna feel like you got attacked. You're gonna get scratched. You're gonna get some bruises. And that's what it was with Turkai. So a lot of the top guys, you know, just started backing away from him. You know, and that's how I got my first dance, if you will, with Rey Mysterio. Per my understanding, you know, some things were supposed to happen and some things got changed. And all of a sudden they said, hey, you got your gear. I'm like, yep, put on your gear. You're wrestling Rey. Like, what? Wow. I'm wrestling Rey Mysterio and I'm not even supposed to be wrestling. Turk walked me out to the ring and I wrestled Rey Mysterio. In San Diego, first and it was my first time being in the ring with Rey Mysterio, and the things that he entrusted me to do, the things that he told me to do, just, you know, it was a dream come true, and it was just unreal. Like, man, you know, the stuff it was my first time doing a turnbuckle corner powerbomb. Never done it before, but Rey had every belief in me that I could do it. After catching him doing a springboard Hurricane Rana. Like, really? If it wasn't a springboard Hurricane Rana, it was a Hurricane Rana. So you guys can go back and watch it. Elijah Burke versus Rey Mysterio on SmackDown. But it's pretty cool, man.
And think about it though. Think about what you just said in San Diego. So he entrusted you to do that in his hometown.
Yeah. It was one of those things, man. One of the moments that I'll never forget. And excuse me. It's one of the moments I'll never forget. And I was very grateful to Ray. Ray's such a good guy, man. Always treated me so well.
Love me some Ray Mysterio. Great guy. You're right.
Yeah. So does Tony Schiavone without the mask. But that's another story. And I won't mention his name no more. my bad on that. But, so I was able to... shake off the heat, if you will, from that. But check this out, Dave. Me saying no to the Spirit Squad with both of the Knicks and Ken Doan, it opened up the door for two other guys who had been sitting in the system for so long, in a developmental system. It opened up the door for them to get a shot at Stardom. You know? So when I said no, they brought up Mike Mondo, and they brought up Johnny Jeter, and two great guys. Johnny Jeter was our locker room leader. He was our Chris Jericho, and Mike Mondo. He's still doing the Spirit Squad thing right now with Ken Doan on the independent scene. So those guys came up as seemingly my replacement, and there you have it. So it went from being four guys to five guys,
and it did work for a while. It was pushed for a while, but it didn't. I don't think it was. It turned out the way Vince thought it would. Would that be correct?
No, I think it went exactly the way Vince thought.
Oh, you did.
Yeah, I don't think it. Yeah. That was all by design. That's it, everything that happened was exactly the way Vince wanted. Male cheerleaders talk about heat. You know, that's what it, and it got that. Who likes male cheerleaders? God damn it! So. So they came up there and they did it, and they made a lot of money, man. They were wrestling the big shows. They were wrestling DX. They were doing everything up there, man. And they made a lot of money really, really fast. But I knew I wasn't looking at right then. I was looking at down the line, and even, you know, even if you don't go on to do this or that or the other, I didn't want that certain stain. I knew that once that ran its course, it was going to be hard, especially if me being the lone black guy out there wearing Afro puffs and doing pom-pom cheerleaders, you know, cheerleading skits or whatnot. So I just said, you know what? I didn't want to be the token black, you know, just like in the movies, there's always one. But I didn't want to be the token black guy. I didn't feel comfortable. You know, I'm sure I would have had to have my Afro out or have Afro puffs and all that stuff. And it's just one of the things I just said, I'm not comfortable with it. And like I said, I'm glad that Vince appreciated my honesty. And they allowed me to wait until something else came along. And thanks to Court Bauer, you know, they found something good. Court Bauer called me up and said, you know, we're ready to bring you up. And here's the cool part, and then you can take it over from here. I hope this voice makes it all the way through. But here's the cool part. When I finally get the call up, I get up there. I'm walking. I got my suitcase. I'm just getting into the building, and all of a sudden I see this husky figure walking ever so confident. And I see it walking towards me, and I go, wait a minute. I just pause in my footsteps. I just stop, and all of a sudden Dream comes walking up. And I said, Dustin, how you doing? It's Elijah Burke. I stuck out my hand to shake his hand. He shooed my hand away, took his hand and put it around my neck, grabbed my trap and said, I know exactly who you are, boy. You don't need to introduce yourself to me. I know all about you. You and I, we finna make some magic together. And from that moment on, Dusty personally dealt with me. When it came down time to my promos, when it came time for me to do promos, they had a little stuff written here and there that you were supposed to do. They was going with that format. They're more so in that format now where they just write it and you got to say what they write.
Right.
But the writer was right, give you some bullet points and all of that. Dusty had this paper. I'll never forget it.
He said, you see this paper right here? He said, read it. You see that? That's what they want you to say. He said, get it here. He balled it up. He threw it behind. He said, now I want you to say what you want to say. Don't you worry about Stephanie. I'll deal with them. Let me deal with this. You just say what you want to say. I said, wow. And that's where I became very, ever more so confident in delivering my promos and having the ability to convey what it was that needed to be conveyed at that time.
And talk about a full circle moment, you know, being the little boy sitting
yes, sir.
Grandfather's foot, you know, watching Dusty Rhodes and looking up to him. And now he's taking you under his wing. That's yeah. One of those things that, you know, people only dream about, and it only happens to a certain few. That I love that story. That's a great story. And the funny thing is, you know, we could argue about, you know, bullet points versus word for word versus just let them go out and talk. And I'm a more let them go out and talk kind of guy. But Dusty had to understand, even though he was playing in the corporate world, he had to understand that if he was given what to say back in the 70s and 80s, he wouldn't be Dusty Rhodes,
right.
The American Dream. His promos are
right.
Still to this day. I don't have to tell anybody that this day, anybody listening to the show knows this. Some of the most legend, you know, you still, you know, turn on ESPN or Sports Illustrated website and you know they're playing Hard Times, Hard Time. I don't know,
yeah.
You know, Hard Times is, you know, one of the greatest promos of all time. But so he understood, and
you know what my favorite promo of his. It's really not Hard Times for me. Now, of course, that's one of the most memorable promos. That's his most memorable promo ever.
I have a favorite one, too, so this is going to be funny. We'll see if we agree on it, but go ahead. You tell me what you think.
Oh, my favorite Dusty promo is The View Never Changes.
Ding, 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 ding.
Yes, sir.
We agree, sir.
Wow. Wow, that is my favorite Dusty promo ever.
Arn Anderson right is a walk behind. Yep.
That's right. And when you walk behind that, the view never changes, David. The view never changes. I'm telling you, that thing right there, and I still go back and watch that promo to this day.
Oh, I do,
I just looked at it probably three, four weeks ago. It gives me chills every time I watch it. The way that he controlled that crowd, he stuck up that hand, and that crowd just sounded, I mean, just the way he did things. And if you look out there in the audience, you can see people of all races and gender. You look out there, you'll see them, like, grabbing one another. And there's this one black lady I just remember just vividly. She's waving her hands like she's in church. You know, that's what we call it, church, not church. But she's just waving her hand, man. And it just gosh, man. So that's my favorite Dusty promo. And let me share this with you.
Then before you do, I just love the end. And we could see this with a hug and a kiss, baby. You know, and him and Dustin embracing.
Yeah.
I got to see that live, man. That was in Macon, Georgia. And I got to see that live. But it's funny, you say that you went back and watched this. There's like a playlist I have in my head. Usually at about 2 in the morning on a Friday or Saturday night, if I've had some vodkas and I'm there's nothing on TV, that I'll there's like a playlist, and that's one of the YouTube videos in my playlist. The View Never Changes. I got the of course the Ric Flair Jay Lethal back and forth, which is one of the greatest of all time, and there's a few more as well. But that's funny that you said that. I know Hard Times gets all the attention, but The View Never Changes, I think, was the best as well. But go ahead, what were you going to say?
Me too. Hey, real quick on the Ric Flair thing, anything Flair did on the mic, TNA-wise, for me, was gold. I'm sorry. It was Crazy Flair was one of my favorite Flairs. Just like Crazy Joker Sting was one of my best things. Flair, uncensored. I mean, come on, it's TNA. Who the hell is going to tell Rick what to say, right?
Yeah, of course.
You put a mic in Rick's hand. I mean, come on, but that's another story. But back to Dusty.
Well, he came from WWE, which, you know, they had him retire and everything super scripted, especially by then. So, you know, then he comes to TNA and they say what you want to say. And, you know, knowing Ric Flair, like I do. And I know, like, you got to know him. You know, those are his favorite words. Say what you want to say, you know. But the Jay Lethal Ric Flair promo is right up there as one of the best to watch when you got a buzz. Just if any of the listeners that are out there, you know, want something interesting to watch when they now tonight when I get a buzz, since we're taping this on a Friday night and I'll be having a couple of drinks when we're done tonight, I'm going to be looking up the Ayatollah's Tough Man contest video. So I hope it's
there too. I haven't been back on it. But back to Dusty really quick.
Sure.
It wasn't what Dusty said that made his promo so good. It was how Dusty said. It was how he emphasized the words, his body language when he said certain things, how he looked. And for those who wants to get into the business or whatnot, I mean, that's what I'm patting myself off of. That's why Pope, when he talked, he always talks with his hands. I always slow down my words. It's just because it's just how you convey it, man. But not to play down you, because I'm about to come to you in a second, Dave. I got to say, come to you by setting up this story this way. One thing about Dusty and what you said, a dream come true. It was absolutely a dream come true, and it came full circle for me. The only thing that would have punctuated that circle, put a bow on it, if you will, was me getting a picture with Dusty. Now, that was something even back then in 2006, 2007, we weren't accustomed. We still had flip phones and, you know, the iPhones wasn't really the big thing as of yet, but they were out. But, you know, we weren't backstage taking pictures. It was something that we didn't do. And I don't know if there was ever a picture of me and Dusty taken. If anybody's listening and ever, you know, you come across it, then please send, share, whatever, to DaBlackPope, DaBlackPope on Twitter, or just type in Elijah Burton. But I never got that picture. And when I would be leaving Orlando sometimes, heading home to Jacksonville, if I didn't have to fly somewhere else, I will always take a moment and think about stopping to the NXT Center. But being that I was TNA contracted and, you know, under their banner, I didn't want to cause any ruckus. But I regret it. There's a video where I know it's been shared so many times and people have watched it where, you know, I spoke about Dusty on the morning he died. And I was full of emotion. And part of, you know, just knowing that I surpassed up that opportunity. I passed that opportunity up. I could have stopped and said, to hell with it. I could have saw Dusty one last time, not knowing that it would be the last time. And I could have got a picture with Dusty. I don't have that, but I do have the memories, and I'm very proud of that. And going to you now, Dave, the same thing. I look back now as if it's been 10 years, brother, 20 years ago, brother. But I look back now and, you know, 6 months ago, you and I was in a freaking room together, whatever you want to call it. And I never said, Dave, let's grab a quick pic. You and I looking dapper, and you are legendary to me, Dave. I told you this in so many words, but to me, you're legendary, brother. There was Gary Michael Capetta, and then there was Dave freaking Penzer. And I know you have huge respect for Gary Michael Capetta, but it baffles me that I never said, Dave, let's take a picture. So the next time I see you, that would be the first thing I do. I'm doing that with everyone now. I was just with Ricky Steamboat, and I was just with Lisa Marie. We've taken plenty of pictures together, but Lisa Marie, Tara, Victoria from WWE, that's my girl. Love her to death. She's one of the boys. My favorite travel partner. But now, anytime I come across any of my friends in this business, especially guys who have that, in my opinion, legendary status like yourself, I'm not wasting a moment again. I'm not going to let such a moment pass me by. So we'll be taking a picture. I don't care how tore up we look. And, you know, Pope only likes to take pictures when he's looking his best, but we'll deal with it when that time comes.
Well, first of all,
I have first a ton of respect for you, Dave.
Thank you. First of all, thank you for the kind words. And it's nothing you didn't say to me when we were in Impact, and it meant a lot to me. And the second thing is, ironically enough, you know, we take that for granted. I don't have a picture with Dusty Rhodes. I don't have a picture with Roddy Piper. And I was Roddy Piper's tour manager. We were on a bus together, a tour bus together for 45 days crisscrossing the country. And you just, I don't know how to say this. You just don't think it's, you're not going to get, you just don't think you're not going to get another opportunity. So, you know, I've been doing it a lot more too, but not as much as you seem to be doing. But, you know, I saw Mean Gene, Gene Okerlund at WrestleCon a couple years ago and took a picture with him. And I'm not a big picture guy only because I don't, you know, I've kind of let myself go and, you know, but I don't like looking at what 51 has done to me 51 years. But I just said, screw it. I said, you know, I don't give a crap. I'm going to grab this for posterity because there's so many guys like Dusty and Roddy and people like that who I never got an opportunity to have a picture with. And you know, I just never even thought about it. You know, I remember when Dusty passed and I thought I wanted to put a picture on Facebook of me and Dusty and say, you know, rest in peace, dream, you know, and I did put something up on Facebook, but I went to look through my pictures. There was nothing there. I had none. And I was like, I'm thinking about it. And I'm like, son of a bitch, we didn't take a picture. I never just thought of it.
Yeah. I probably, my care concern about that is simple. I just would have liked to be able to look up every now and then. I don't even know if I would have shared that because I would have held it in such high regard, me personally, because what it meant to me. I mean, it's kind of like my family. On social media, I don't do my family and all that stuff because that's my family. And what I do on social media is for a certain people, a certain crowd, you know.
Sure.
But I just would have liked to have walked through my home every now and then and look up and see myself with Dusty with a big smile. It's kind of how I felt about Michael Jackson. I mean, just I would love the same thing there. I was going to the I know we're going off trail, so I'll stop. But I was going to his last concert. I had my tickets for the UK show. This Is It. So I was looking forward to that myself. But all right, let's get back on track.
Since we're talking about it, I saw Michael Jackson and the Jacksons because he toured with his brothers. And I saw in 1985, I saw the tour in the Jacksonville Stadium. Because I was going to university.
Wow, Gator Bowl.
Yeah, Gator Bowl. I was going to University of Florida. And so we, being a bunch of fraternity brothers and some girls, drove up and went and saw the Jacksons at the Gator Bowl. So that was the one and only time. I'm a big concert buff, but the one and only time I ever saw the Jacksons or Michael Jackson. But that would have been cool to see one of those last shows.
Now, here's the real question.
Yeah.
Here's the important question. Did you get laid that night?
God, I don't remember.
you're too drunk. You're passed out.
Back then I didn't drink. I partook in some other stuff, but I didn't drink. Nothing hard. You know, just I partook in some stuff that's like back then that's like legal now in like half the countries, but half the states. But
gotcha.
I wasn't a big drinker back then. Actually, yeah. I didn't become a big drinker until I got in the wrestling business. But that's another story. So, I got so many questions to ask you, and you've been so generous with your time. We might have to have you back and get to some of the other stuff. But I just want to touch real quickly. I know you went to ECW. You did, I believe, your first WrestleMania was the New Breed versus the ECW Originals. How was that to finally be at a WrestleMania? Tell me about how that culmination of you know is what you were you know built up and. You know, all the thoughts you must have gone through your head of turning down the Spirit Squad and all that stuff and finally made it to the big show.
There you go. And I don't even know if the Spirit Squad made it to WrestleMania. I'm not even sure about that. I don't know. I'm just saying. I don't recall. But I tell you what, two things come to mind. One, me standing backstage. Got chills talking about it right now. Me standing backstage and Undertaker holding me, telling me that's what they want to see. I cried like a baby. And Undertaker just grabbed me and pulled me in. He said, that's the type of passion, man, that we like to see.
That was before I went out there. That was before I went out there. Yeah, and Undertaker grabbed me, man, and that was pretty, you know, looking back on that, man, you know, Undertaker for being, you know, the old sheriff, if you will, and being the leader that he's always been, to know that he took this kid and pulled him in and hugged him for a second, you know, and then consoled me, and not that I was hurting or anything, but he just told me that's the passion that they like to see, man. And he said, enjoy the moment. He said, enjoy this moment.
That's awesome.
That's the first thing that comes to mind. Yeah, man, it really is. And the second thing that comes to mind, if you go watch that match, you'll see me standing on the apron on the outside while probably Matt Stryker is in there. And you'll see me looking away from the ring while I'm on the apron. I'm literally looking at all the people in that place. And from my understanding at the time, that was the second largest crowd, because that was 87,000.
Wow.
And that was the second largest WrestleMania crowd up to that point. So that was pretty big for me, man. Pretty big. And we had a lot more time that was actually cut. Now, the WrestleMania moment cannot be, just the moment in itself. I don't care if you just walk to the ring and walk back. If you're on WrestleMania, you're on WrestleMania. But the match is what it was. The real WrestleMania match happened two nights later on the ECW television. They actually gave us the time that we were supposed to have on WrestleMania. They gave that to us on that show. And, man, kudos to everybody involved. We tore the house down. Dearborn, Michigan. I'll never forget it. We tore it. Man, I'm like Ric Flair. I'm calling out names. Now, I hope I'm right, because I know some people are going to go look it up. But I believe Dearborn, Michigan, we went out there following WrestleMania 23, ECW television that night, New Breed versus the ECW Originals, and we freaking tore it up, man. That is one of my proudest moments.
I love it.
Yeah, not to kill
the mood, because we're having fun here, but I'd be remiss, when we talked about this a little bit in our washer and dryer closet in Impact, but I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you to give me your thoughts about you being the last opponent that Chris Benoit had. And I know that there's a little bit more than that that you had told me, and wondering if you feel comfortable sharing that.
We'll give you some to a certain extent. First off, first off, when it comes to was that even a segue, Dave? Like, good Lord, how do you jump from WrestleMania 23 to Chris Benoit? You're worse than Nasty freaking Grace. Have some dignity, Dave.
Oh, see, that hurt.
God.
Well, you know, I know you're a little bit. I know you're a little bit under the weather, and I want, you know, I got certain bullet points I want to hit. Well, once you're feeling better and you have some more time, I'd love to have you back and fill in the in-betweens, but I'm trying to hit the bullet points here. Cause, if your voice goes, we ain't going to get much out of you.
Let me say this.
Sure.
Let me say this. There's certain elements of what we discussed that I got to say for a book, but when it comes to Chris Benoit, it's a sad, tragedy that happened. I, being his last opponent, I could tell you this. I talked to him backstage. I wrestled him that whole weekend, and we wrestled in Georgia, we wrestled in North Carolina, and then at television. I believe we did Macon, Georgia. Oh, my gosh, I'm getting old, because I'm calling, you know, the older guys, they always name the states and stuff, like the dates and everything. Good Lord. But we did Macon, Georgia, and then we did Carolina, and then whatever the other Carolina was. I think it was just Charleston, Macon, Georgia, Charleston, and then North Carolina. And he was Chris Benoit. He was the same Chris Benoit that I had come to know. And, it was pretty cool being in the ring with Chris Benoit at that time, because Chris Benoit had been recently faced with being moved over to ECW in the draft, I believe.
Right.
And a lot of people, you know, a lot of people at the time saw ECW as the bastard brand, which I guess it was. The brand that didn't get all of, you know, get the certain amount of attention that as the other two had received. And he asked several people, you know, if I go over to ECW, who can benefit from me being there? Who, you know, who should I look out for? And he came to me. He's telling me this. I'm telling you, but I'm telling you what he told me. He said, everybody said you. So I wanted to come over here and work with you. I've watched you. I see your stuff. And I want to work with you to help get you to the next level. And I thought that was freaking huge. And it was, because it forever changed the way how I do my matches, even to this day now. And that is a finish. And that's it. A finish. And that is it. I went to Chris Benoit before the match. He was back there doing his squats. He always would do his squats and all that stuff, man. I don't know how he had so much energy, but he would do his squats. He had his coffee straws, coffee stirrers in his mouth. Yeah, he would always have those, chewing them like it was bubble gum. And I said, hey, Chris, I said, I just stood there waiting on him to acknowledge me because I wasn't going to interrupt him. And once he saw me standing there, he was like, what's up, Elijah? I was like, just waiting on you. You want to go over the match, you know, whatever. He's like, yeah, what do you want to know? I said, do you have a heat spot in mind? And he stopped like he had just saw like a ghost or something. Like he saw somebody going in his wallet. He stopped, then he kind of stood up, he looked, and he was like, no, you're wrong. You're wrong. Don't worry about a heat spot. Let the people decide.
That's true.
And that stuck with me forever, forever and a day. To this very day, it sticks with me. And when we went out there and we had that match, and he told me, I said, okay, well, what's the finish? It'd be one of them. You'll know when to tap. it'd be the cross race or the shooter, you know, whichever one is there, you'll know. And that was it. And so when you go watch that last match on ECW, you'll see, it's not rough. I mean, it's not smooth. It is just the way it's supposed to be. It's rough. It's rugged, and you're going to see nothing in there is freaking, you just know it's not planned. You will know it's not planned. When I threw Chris Benoit into the buckle, he just told me to reverse, and then when I threw him into the buckle, he took the Bret Hart front buckle, and I knew that was heat because of the people reacted, and he stayed down. And that was time for me to start my heat, and I punctuated it. So, long story short, to have that match, at the time of Chris Benoit, at that time, it was a big moment for me because I knew that was going to be my, you know, coming to the next level moment. And obviously, the very next week, the news came out, and we shun it. We don't condone anything about it. But it's a sad situation and with a lot of question marks, in my opinion, still to this day, of things that are just unanswered, seem to have, little areas of gray. But, I could tell you that Nancy, I talked to her that weekend. I talked to Lil Daniel that weekend. May they rest in peace. Well, I didn't talk to Lil Daniel. I played with him because he was running around. But they were very sweet. Nancy, she was just a sweet woman, and I'm so saddened that their lives were taken, and it's just a sad situation.
Yeah, and there's some more stuff for the book, so I'm just gonna go out on a limb and say when you write a book, fans, you're gonna want to read it regardless, because you're one of the best, better storytellers that you know, and one of the better people in letting people know how you feel and putting your words together in a way where you could almost live vicariously. So, but yeah, there's more to that, and I'm not going to press you on it, but definitely worth the read when you finally do put out a book. We'll have you back here, hopefully, when you do. But how do you process that? You know, I knew Chris. You know, I've said that before. We've talked about Chris Benoit with different guys on the show. I knew a little bit more than most people did because we lived in the same area, and Chris would confide in Johnny Grunge, and Johnny Grunge would confide in me. So I knew a lot more than a lot of people did, and I knew there was a dark side. How do you kind of put that all together when you see a guy is trying to help you out, he's teaching you stuff and tells you that he's there to, you know, to help get you to the next level, and you're playing with his son, and you're talking to his wife, and then, you know, you hear something like that, you know, what's only a few days later, you know, how do you process that as you know, just curious how you process it.
It was hard. It was hard for me. I wrestled Chris that Tuesday night. And if you go back and watch the match, Chris did the diving headbutt. Now, when Chris went to do the diving headbutt, he told me to put up my knees. And so I put my knees up, but Chris came from the opposite direction. So when he comes from the opposite direction and I got to put my knees up, I actually had to raise my knees all the way up above my head. And so when Chris, hard, solid 245 pounds come crashing down, my back was, it felt like it exploded. I don't even know how I finished the match. I couldn't walk afterwards. Okay. I remember going backstage and everybody was saying, you know, congratulating on the match, good match. And I fell down on the floor. I could not walk. And Dusty go over there behind those crates over there. Don't let nobody see you. Go over there. And that's what I did. And I just laid there, and the word got to Johnny. And Johnny was like, we're going to keep you off the shows. You're not going to do the house shows because we need you healthy. So I did that. And I went to the doctor. And Chris called me that Thursday. That's the crazy part. He called me that Thursday. And he left a message on my phone. See, I'm giving you a little bit more than you thought you were going to get. But he called me that Thursday and left a nice message on my phone. You know, and he was very apologetic, and he was just being concerned and was saying that he was just checking on me, and he was leaving the doctor's office himself, and he heading to the gym, and he wanted to check on me to make sure that I was okay and everything, and that he was, again, sorry about, you know, the injury that happened. And then for that to happen, there was a talk about processing. I mean, how do you process it? It's like you're in a twilight zone. I remember bursting in tears. I just couldn't believe it. You know, first I couldn't believe that they were gone. You know, then I couldn't believe that Chris did it, you know, per the results of the investigation, you know? So it's one of those things. And like I say, me being a law field, I can always, you know, there's always a devil's advocate, if you want to. No, I don't want to use that in this scenario, but there's always another way to look at things, and I don't know. It's just a bad thing.
Well,
but it was hard to process. It still is hard to process.
And I know that there's a lot of people who take solace in the fact, and I know Chris Jericho. You know, Chris Jericho, out of all the people that were in sort of the little group in WCW, used to travel together. Chris took it the hardest, and me and Chris had long conversations right after it happened, because he's trying to understand what I knew that he never saw, what I saw that he never saw. But I think he takes solace in the fact that, you know, they say he had the mind of a 80-year-old because of concussions and stuff like that. And I say, if that makes you feel better, and, you know, then that's cool. And I'm not saying he didn't. Obviously, the guy had a bunch of concussions. Yeah. But, you know, a guy that puts three matches in a row together with you on the road, and then calls you coming from the doctor to see how you're doing, that's not a guy with a mind of an 80-year-old. You know, something happened after he called you to see how you were doing, and, you know, we'll never know the timeline, obviously, and probably better that we don't. But you know, so you know, there's a lot, like
well,
you said.
I
go ahead.
I will say this.
when they came out with the 80-year-old brain or whatnot, you know, when they tested his tissues and everything, the one thing that did came to mind was Chris was on the last time we wrestled. When we wrestled, he was adamant. He looked at me. He said, "Talk to me out there." And I said, "Okay." He said, "No, Elijah, talk to me out there. Okay, communicate." And that kept coming to my mind, you know, because after all that came about, it made me think, well, you know, well, shoot, maybe Chris did have that mind, and maybe he was very forgetful, you know, and so that did come to my mind. And I've been concussed a time or two myself, a couple of times, to be honest, probably more than a couple of times, but you know, I'll sit here and say something, and you know, sometimes I can forget something too, but I don't know to what extreme Chris was. I know what they say, but we'll never know. We'll absolutely never know just how bad it was, because Chris, he seemed good to me.
Yeah, it's a combination of a lot of things, and like you said, we'll never know, but I appreciate your candor and talking about that. I want to jump ahead to TNA and the Pope gimmick. Is that something that you, because if I did my research correctly, you kind of toyed with that in developmental for WWE. So was that something that you already had in mind, or was that wasn't something that TNA came up with? It was something you already had in mind, and I'm just guessing on that one.
Yeah, I didn't toy with that at all in developmental. That was me being in me and my whole run. I was moving to SmackDown, more and more SmackDown, and out of ECW. So I wanted to do a different thing. You know, sometimes you get stale, you got to change it up. And Arn Anderson used to say all the time, "Why do they have you being a heel? Like, you know, I have to stop you from doing all this good stuff that you do, because you do these cool behind moves and it's better than, you know, you outshine the baby face. And now I gotta pull you back. I can't, right. I can't do Arn right now because of my voice." But he would say that he would bring it up in the meetings. Let's just make the kid a face. And so I had some time where they wasn't doing much with me. You know, I was going out there here and there. So I said, shoot, you know, let me do my Pope gimmick. I think it's time for a change. Let me separate myself and do something different. And I went, and I did go back to do a vignette, because you can tell these writers and stuff what you want to do, and they'll take it and they'll turn it into something completely different. So I wanted to show them. And one day, we're in Los Angeles, California, and I had been talking about the Pope gimmick, the Black Pope, to be exact, right, because I was writing a column for ECW.com, and I would actually write the column myself, and the people would actually send emails in, and I would actually respond to them. And so people were sending me their problems. People were asking me for advice. Like, when they found out that this was really Elijah Burke they were talking to, they started hitting me up religiously, man. People asking for prayer, people asking for this, that, and the other, marital problems. So I said, what can I do different? What can I call myself? How can I make myself different? What can I be? I didn't want to be a bishop, because I was the guy of light in WWE. I referred to myself as the guy of light, the paragon of virtue. So I thought, nah, I don't want to be a bishop. There's too many of that. We already had Deacon Batista. We already had Reverend Devon. And I said, there's never been a Black Pope. So I think I want to, you know, they're going to be my congregation, and I'm going to refer to myself. I'm going to be the Black Pope, because there's never been a Black Pope, and I want to be the first. And that's how the Black Pope came up. And one day I show up to the Staples Center, and they go, "Hey Pope, They go, "Hey Elijah, do your Pope gimmick." And they were already calling me Pope backstage, Black Pope. You know, they already called me Black Pope backstage, because, you know, he had been making rounds. I had been trying to do some vignettes here and there with Bruce Pritchard and whatnot. Right. And I remember Bruce telling me, "No, you got to be Hellfire and Brimstone. You got to tell them this your way. Are they going to hell?" And blah, blah, blah. You know, I was really excited, because I did want to do something. I wanted to do something with Brother Love. But the one thing I didn't want to do with the Black Pope Yeah, the one thing I didn't want to do with the Black Pope is already, you know, got the entendre, if you will, a pope. It already has that there, but I didn't want to do the religion thing.
Right.
You know, I just wanted to have the name. I didn't want to make it a religious thing. People don't come to no sporting event or no entertainment event to be preached at or to deal with politics. If they want to go, they want to hear preaching or hear the good word, they'll go to church. And I didn't want to be doing no hellfire and brimstone. I just, again, it was one of those things like the Spirit Squad. I couldn't, that stuff is near and dear to me. That's true. That's who I am. I'm a man that believes in a good book. So there was no way I was willing to go out there. And I don't think I'd be able to do it comfortably to go out there and try to do a gimmick where I'm making light of it. Sure. So I wanted to stay away from that. The Black Pope was just going to be a name. And basically, I drew that character's inspiration from a show called Boondocks. It's a show that come on the Cartoon Network, Boondocks. And there was a character on there called a pimp called Slickback. And basically, I wanted to be a pimp called Pope. That's all it was. And that's what I became when I went to when I left WWE, when I got released from there and I went to TNA, they were going to bring me in as Elijah Burke. Obviously, they always do that stuff. They want to capitalize off of the WWE name and everything WWE has done with your character. That's the smart move, right? So, yeah, you bring them in as the world know them and you get something out of it. Well, I showed Vince Russo the vignette that I did, that I had prepared. And when Vince Russo saw it, to his credit, man, I always credit that guy for this. When he saw it,
you're the
he
one.
Came back out, bro, 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 no, bro, forget Elijah Burke. You have to be the Pope. You got to be the Pope, bro. And I already have your name, man. I already have it. De Niro, money, man, because the Pope is money. And that was it. No one in TNA ever told me what to do, told me how to do it. Vince Russo said, what will Pope do, man? You just go out there and be Pope. I can't write for Pope. I'm a 40-year-old Italian from New York. I can't write for Pope. You just go out and you be you, bro. And then that's how the Pope got over, because he let me go out there and be me. He didn't try to write for me. He just told me what he wanted me to say, and I did it.
He wrote for the artist formerly known as Prince Iaukea and Kiwi and all those guys in WCW. So I'm glad he smartened up by the time it got to you, because you could have been a side note in history like Prince Iaukea. Mike Hayner is a good guy. I don't know if you know this. I don't know if anybody knows this, but he won the lottery a bunch of years back. You know that?
Prince Iaukea won the lottery?
Yeah, his name is Mike Hayner. He lives in Florida. He, nicest guy in the world. He won like...
Jeez, way to put the guy out there, Dave.
What?
Jeez. Now he's going to have people looking up his name and calling
no,
him?
No, he didn't get
hey,
it.
If
he
you find out where he lives, let me know.
It's not like the guy up the road here, just 20-year-old kid who just won $400 million. No, he won like $8 million, $10 million. And it's not like saying that's not a lot, but if you don't take the what I never understood about the lottery, and we're going way off topic, but if you don't take the one-time payment, which is about half of what you get, then it dies with you. So you can't like leave it in a will. So if you take like 30 payments and you die 15 years later, that payment stop. You can't pass it on. So he took he won like $10 million. Wow. He took half. He paid $5 million. He probably paid $2 million in taxes. So he stuck $3 million in the bank, and he pulls about $200,000, last I spoke to him, out every year and lives off that and is retired. But he's not, he ain't starting no wrestling promotion or nothing, with that kind of money. But he made enough to be able to retire early and live a comfortable life. But he's not nobody's going to be hitting him up for any loans. But yeah, he won the lottery.
Well, cool is that? Well, the next time you and I have this conversation, I guess I better go get me a ticket. Maybe we'll be talking about how Pope hit
there
the
you go.
That's pretty awesome.
The guy right up the road, 20-year-old kid, just won four. It just took it half of it, just $200 million. He lives about Could you imagine 20 years old and winning $200 million, walking away with $200 million in the lottery? I saw a funny post on Facebook today.
Wow.
I saw a funny post on Facebook today. Somebody said, I wonder how many independent wrestling promoters in Florida are trying to find that guy.
You're right.
Yeah. Hey, all I need is $10 million,
I
and you could
20-year-old one.
You could be a wrestling promoter. So, so tell me, any of your thoughts about working in TNA? You had gotten there right around the same time I left, and I really wasn't watching the product after I left because I figured if I wasn't getting paid at that point, what was I watching it for? I don't have a lot of memories of a lot of the stuff that you did. I know there was some stuff you did with Fortune, and I was familiar. I watched a little bit of that just because Flair is Flair, and you got to always watch Ric Flair and a live microphone, as we talked about. But any memories that stick out to you in your time with not so much at the end with the color commentating, but the original 4 years that you were there as the Pope wrestling?
Well, brother, if somebody freaking asked me what to include in the highlight reel, I doubt it's going to be Pope sitting at the doggone table with Josh freaking Matthews. I mean, come on. You don't consider that a highlight, do you?
No. But, it is what it is.
But, it is. But
we'll get to Josh. I got Josh on my list.
Uh-oh. Well, I better save that, then. Let me save that.
Twitter blocking son of a gun. But tell me what is in the highlight.
Josh has blocked you?
Oh, you weren't there? We laughed about it. So I thought after we laughed about it.
Yeah, but I mean,
he still blocked me.
Are you still blocked?
Yeah.
Oh, what a douche.
And there's no heat there. We got along fine. He was helping me learn he was teaching me how to market, on Twitter to get more followers and stuff, because he was doing the digital marketing, and he was going to, once they got the new website up, he was going to put my Twitter info on there, but I didn't last that long. But everything was cool. I mean, it's not like we went out and had dinner together. And, Josh is a different kind of guy and kind of sticks to himself a little bit.
Amen to that, brother.
But he's still blocked me on Twitter. So before we get ahead of ourselves, because I want to talk about Josh, give me, what is in the highlight reel of the 4 years that you wrestled there?
Okay. Highlight reel for Pope with Impact, I would certainly say working with Hogan. Dun, dun, dun. I'm sure a lot of people roll their eyes at that. But working with Hogan was one of the highlights. I didn't get a chance to take a big boot from him, but I was able to. Again, we're talking about an icon here. We're talking about someone who changed the industry, someone who made it what it is. We're talking about childhood hero. We're talking about comic book hero. We're talking about animated TV, cartoon characters, you name it. It was Hogan. So to be in the ring with Hogan, saving Hogan from a beatdown from AJ and Flair, and being in the ring and posing with a bloody Hogan, and a lot of people may remember this, but I don't know if it was on there or not. It should have been on there. If you go to the end of that match, we were doing our calls to the fans. And at that time, Pope was on fire. Pope was on fire. And Hogan would do his ear, and Pope would raise his hand. And when I raised my hand, I was getting louder reactions than Hogan in his ear.
Wow.
And it was pretty cool, man. And I'll just never forget that. That was an awesome moment for me. I have that picture framed. Obviously working with Flair again. I had the opportunity to work with Flair in WWE. I wrestled Flair in WWE, which was awesome. I cried like a baby after that. That was a dream come true for me again, wrestling with Flair. And then to work with Flair again and TNA highlight reel. One of the main highlight reels for me was to form the short-lived new TNA version of the Wolfpack with Steve and Kevin Nash. That was a highlight for me right there. We wrestled at Bash at Beach. Excuse me, Bash at the Beach. We wrestled at Bound for Glory at Daytona Beach. At Daytona Beach, Florida, Bound for Glory. And that was 2011, I believe.
And I got a chance to team, you know, with Sting and Nash and walk down that ramp between two guys that was a part of the Monday Night Wars, who were an integral part of WCW, helped WCW get to where it was as being a top promotion. And just, I'm in the midst of these two Hall of Famers. You know, it was awesome. And we were opposite of Samoa Joe, Jeff Jarrett, you know, another Hall of Famer. And Hogan was supposed to be a part of that. And it didn't come to fruition because, you know, Hogan had the back surgery. But a testament to Hogan. Hogan, just out of back surgery, much, much pain, was sitting in a freaking limousine. You know, I'm sure he had a little liquid courage to help him as well. But that man came out on crutches just to make that angle work at the end of the night, which was a dumb angle, but still, he committed to being there just to make it work, you know, and that's a testament for me to him. But yeah, so those are some of my high points, and the other one was wrestling AJ Styles. And
that was the building where he turned heel for the first time. I'll never forget it.
You're right, the same building. So I think that was where they were going before he had to have that surgery. I was hoping, looking back, that, man, I was like, man, Hogan, just wait till after this. Because, you know, Hogan couldn't feel his hand. He couldn't feel his hand, you know. So he had to go have surgery. I was hoping that it just waited until after the event. But, you know, he had to do what was best for him. You know, Eric Bischoff kept assuring me, oh, Hogan will be there. Hogan will be there. But then when they showed him having surgery and stuff, I was like, shoot, it's over with. I was hoping it was a swerve job, knowing TNA, everything's a swerve, and they always work the boys, but it was a shoot.
Yeah, and that was also the same building.
So those are my good ones.
That was also the same building where he laid down for Jeff Jarrett.
So many things happened in that building, and I think they were trying to make it another monumental moment, you know, in the Hogan memories in that building, and it was a memory, all right. It was a dud, in my opinion. You turn Jeff Hardy, you know, I mean, come on, you know, the hottest babyface you have in the company, and that's what they were trying to do. They were trying to do the whole, you know, like Hogan did, that the fans would go ape, you know what, crazy over it, but I don't think it panned out the way they thought it would.
Sometimes history could recreate itself, and sometimes it just doesn't work, and there's no telling, but at least they tried. So you go, I'm going to wrap this up because I appreciate the time you've given me, and I'm not feeling good. So you go back as a color commentator.
Don't worry, get it while you can. I'm never doing it again, so you just better get it while you can.
In that case, let's go back to... So you were in Puerto Rico, and no, I'm kidding. By the way, the one question I have about Puerto Rico, did the checks clear?
Oh, man, did the checks clear in Puerto Rico?
I got a bounce check. The one time I ever did Puerto Rico, I told the story before. It was an XWF versus WWC invasion for the anniversary, and I had to roll around with a referee as part of, you know, a gimmick match with me and Jimmy Hart against the referee and another manager. And so I got a check, and everybody said, you know, be sure to go, as soon as you get off the plane, go to a check cashing place. As soon as I got off the plane, went to the cashed the check. I was breathing a sigh of relief. 2 days later, they called me and they said, oh, you got to bring the money back. The check bounced. I'm like, son of a gun. So the only question I had about World Wrestling Council was, Did the check clear?
Paid in cash.
There you go.
Paid in cash. Yes, sir. That's the only. I took a check one time, and that's because I worked for the individual before at the ECW arena. That should have said it all right there.
Yeah.
Working at the ECW arena, I wrestled Jerry Lynn. They wanted to bring me back to do me and Jerry Lynn part two. I went, and you know, they had to. They ran into some issues, but the guy had the ECW arena owner to write a check and told me it was good and everything. And they treated me well. They put me in good hotels. So I was like, you know, we're all good. I trust you. Got home, cashed the check. It bounced. It's the only time that I've ever taken a check. It was the last time I took a check. It's the only time I've been screwed over by doing indies, and that's one of the reasons I really don't like to do them that much. So yeah,
luckily I had made about $300 in the Doubletree Casino that weekend, so I had a little bit of money. But if not, it's been a total And a totally different story for a totally different time, but Abdullah the Butcher tried to put all his drinks on my bar tab. But we digress here.
Shut up.
Oh, God.
Listen. The only thing that I hated about when I was over there for that council event, World Wrestling Council event, was the fact that Abdullah and some other... Well, Abdullah never got in the ring. They were going to induct him into something. He never got in the ring. I don't even know if it was him and Carlos Colon again. I think it was. Abdullah never got in the ring, and as soon as the physicality happened, he was bleeding. And then the match before us, and he was bleeding, buckets of blood. Never got in the ring. Never. I said, oh, my God. And then as soon as we got to the ring, me and Armando Estrada against the Dudley Boys, we're coming out there after two people wrestling. I want to say Steve Corino or somebody else. I can't quite remember. But the ring was bloody. It was just, they just go out there and they just bleed. And I'm like, I'm not bumping. I'm like, heat's on you, Armando. I'm not bumping. I'm not laying in this junk. Shoot.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing is yeah. every night we'd sit at the bar and he'd buy me drinks. And everybody, there was like a buzz among the boys, wow. You know? And, you know, Abby doesn't buy drinks for anybody. And, you know, the Nasty Boys were there, you know, so they're ribbing me, you know. Oh, you know, maybe he likes maybe he likes Jewish guys, you know, stuff like that. And, you know, so the whole weekend it was sort of a mystery. Why is Abby buying me drinks? Well, come to find out, when I checked out, he was buying me drinks on my own damn bar tab the whole time. So when he would say, I'll have another one for him and another one for me and another one for him and another one for me. But they were all going on my bar tab, but I didn't pay it. I said, I made him, this Jew made them compare the signatures. And when they saw the signatures of my bar tabs and his bar tabs weren't correct, they said I didn't have to pay him. But he tried to rib me. He almost got me. That would have been a double rib if I had to pay Abby's bar tab and got the bounce check. That wouldn't have sat well with the wife, for sure.
Hey, I got one question for you.
Sure.
I got one question for you before you continue. You were in Orlando when Jimmy and the Nasties started up the XWF, right, with Hogan?
That's actually, I'm in Tampa 16 years later, same house, but that's when I moved to Tampa from Atlanta to come down and work for the XWF. Yeah, that was, I was talent.
You moved from Atlanta on a wing in a prayer? Knowing whether or not that thing was going to fly?
Well, they moved. They paid for the move. The company paid for the move. So there was nothing for me in Atlanta.
Oh, wow.
My severance was about to – I mean, literally the week my severance ended was the week I got my first check from the XWF. And they moved us down. It was the greatest move me and my wife have ever had. And we moved a bunch of times early in our marriage. And almost every year we'd have to move somewhere. But they hired a company that – They came into the house. They packed everything for you, you know, and then they moved us down. And then we were renting a house while we were waiting for this house to be built. And they unpacked everything and put it where you wanted to. Back then, it cost like $4,000 just for the move. So I was like, if you're going to pay for me to move,
somebody had money.
Well, and that's why I couldn't understand why the whole thing fell apart is because, you know, they didn't only move me. They moved Janie Engel down here. You know, I think there was one other person they moved down here on their own dime. So you're talking like $12,000 just to move three people down to Tampa. You'd think that you were pretty sure you were going to be in this for the long haul.
Here, a little known history fact. I was a part of it too. I am in that audience.
No.
And I am on video.
No.
Yes, I was there. Yes, sir. Yep. I was there.
Were you there when I accidentally introduced Hoovy as the new WCW Cruiserweight Champion instead of XWF?
I was there for two. I was there for one, and I think y'all did two tapings. Yeah. It was the taping when Hogan went against Kurt.
No, this would have been the next day.
So I think it was the same.
This would have been the next day.
Okay.
Yeah, I wore 42 hats.
Okay.
So I wore 42 hats. So while I was in the middle of being the ring announcer, they called me to the back to help solve a problem. And I was actually in the back when I made the announcement, and I was so kind of flustered. I announced, you know, instead of new XWF Cruiserweight Champion, I said WCW, and God, everybody popped and ribbed me, you know, because it was fresh on my mind. Luckily, I was one of the guys that was going down to Arkansas to edit the tapes into one-hour shows. So I was able to I was able to pull that you know, when you're the guy editing, you have control over what stays and what goes. So we did a little voiceover and fixed that. But that's cool that you were there. I didn't know that. That's a kind of weird thing. Yeah, we could have been something, but Vince took all the big stars, and that was the end of that. Hey, you went back as a color commentator to TNA. I want to ask you, you know, it sounds like it was some crazy times back towards the end before the sale to Anthem. You know, I don't know if the stories are accurate, but, you know, you hear stories and, you know, some of them were on the Facebook page of the CFO, you know, talking about, you know, trying to get money to do a pay-per-view, you know, down to 12 hours before the actual pay-per-view. As somebody who was part of that, as a color commentator, did you feel any of that, or you just went out, did your job, and you didn't really know what was going on behind the scenes?
I knew of a lot of things that was going on, but as you said, I just went out there and did my job and tried to. Brother, look, let me tell you something. You won't hear Flair say it today, but I was every bit of what Flair was to Impact Wrestling during those times. Throughout those dark times, as he was to WCW, throughout those dark times of theirs, Flair would come out there every week and announce that that's the greatest wrestling organization that there is. I mean, and we all knew that that was a hell of a lie he was telling, but you wanted to believe him because it was Flair, and he was selling it like it's $1 million. You know, even when Vince Russo took over, even when Eric Bischoff and Russo were together, even when it was done, the greatest wrestling, he would do that. Sure. And when I was going out there on commentary throughout all this BS and whatnot, all I wanted to do is to take, look, there are fans that, well, I think what people fail to remember, they forget that there are fans who watch the product casually. Everybody's not on the internet. Everybody's not trying to read behind the scenes and figure out what's going on. A lot of people don't care about that. Some people just want to watch it and be entertained. And so, I would hate when the company would acknowledge things specifically geared or aimed towards what we call smart fans.
Right.
Like, be confident in your product, focus on your product, and put your best foot forward to put out the best product that you can. Stop trying to respond to this. Stop trying. Like, I hate when they would, you know, you don't work the boys. You don't bring people in and keep them locked in a room and all that stuff. Your stuff get out anyways, and they get out because of half the people you got on your writing staff, not because of the boys that are backstage. Like, go out there and do what needs to be done. So when I was on commentary, I would try to put over the fact that this was the one, you know, Impact Wrestling, greatest promotion there is. This is why we're here. It's the best action, I believe that. When the boys are out there breaking their necks, I'm always like the Eddie Edwards. Like, my goodness, the Eddie Edwards, the DJ Z, those guys go out there, man, and break. And I know people listen to this, go, oh, what about EC3? What about James Storm? What about? I'm not talking about them right now. I'm talking about the guys that went out there for reasons that I know, so I can speak of. But they freaking put their bodies on the line. All of them did that. All of them did that. Five, sometimes two, three times a night, five nights in a row. So to me, we had the best athletes in action that there was. And I will try to convey that on commentary. You know, the girls, the Rosemary, Jade, my goodness, the stuff that they did when they were inside that ring was second to none, in my opinion, and I just tried to convey that. So I stayed out of all the politics and the BS, and, you know, you were in those freaking meetings half the time. We had meetings that, you know, that wasn't even meetings, and it was like, what was the point of even being here, you know? So.
Oh, I've sat through plenty of meetings and plenty of companies. And, yeah, usually you learn nothing from any of them. Now, Let me ask you a question, and if you don't want to answer, then we'll edit it out. As somebody who you know has a passion for the wrestling business and has an idea, because you learn from the Flairs and the Dustys and the Takers and the Cornettes and Danny Davises for what's working and what's not. Was it hard to have to, I mean, it was hard enough to have to watch Dixie Carter, you know, do angles with herself and turn heel and then turn babyface and be a star of the show. Not taking anything. I don't know Dixie. She was always kind to me, but it was almost like being force fed on the fans as being a character instead of just being the owner of the company behind the scenes. As somebody who has a wrestling mind, and it's obvious from talking to you for 2 hours and talking to you, you know, back in the day in our little washer and dryer closet, that you have a mind for the business. Is that hard as a commentator to put that over when you kind of know in the back of your mind that it's really kind of stupid?
Well, number one, Dixie didn't write herself into the show. That's number one. Dixie didn't order herself to be in that show. That was something that was done to get Dixie out of the way of other stuff. And I believe that was something that was done to placate her. And as long as you had her out of the way and you gave her a part in this or that, it kind of got her away from everything else. It was kind of like giving a baby candy and say, go play. You know, and that's kind of how I looked at it. But Dixie didn't say, I want to be rolling this show and I want to be this and I want to be that. That was something Russo started for the reasons that I just said. And if I'm wrong, then I stand corrected. But from my understanding, that was a Russo thing in the beginning. And every organization, well, WWE, TNA, you know, you always got to have a authoritative figure. Everybody know that Dixie was the boss. Everybody know that Dixie was in charge. So to have an authority figure in charge, they've already done the Jim Cornette. They've already done, you know, this guy that they did the Dusty. They did, you know, God knows whoever else. But I think it was one of the things where they wanted to try to make the company reality based, especially when Hogan and Bischoff came in with the little Harvey experiment and the way that they were shooting the little quote unquote reality version of their 1 hour show that they have following Impact. They wanted to make it reality based. And since the crowd, since the fan base was more smart now than ever, it was like, just put Dixie out there. I mean, it's her company. Let's make her this. It's not her fault that she's not the best actress. You know, it's not her fault that she can't, you know, it's just not her fault that she can't, you know, you put in these. Dixie is the nicest dame that you can come across.
Yeah, she was always really nice to me.
She's sweet. She's sweet. She's kind. And for anybody to send her out there to try to make her a Stephanie McMahon, they are the ones who should have been reprimanded, if not fired on the spot. You know, but again, that falls back to Dixie.
Yeah, that's actually an interesting take, quite frankly. I don't know that I've ever thought of that or anybody else has ever thought of that, but that is true. They were trying to make her something that she's not. You know, I had Matt Morgan on the podcast a couple of months ago, and he talked about how Dixie had he was having trouble getting him and his wife getting pregnant. And I guess Dixie had the same problem and flew him and his wife out to Nashville to meet with their fertility doctor and put them up. So yeah, I mean, she was trying to play.
Dixie had that problem because she didn't come see Pope. That's another story.
Oh God, there's so many ways I could go from that, but I don't know if I want to touch that with a 10-foot pole. So let's get back to Josh Matthews. How was it?
It was meant just. Oh brother, it's a 10-foot pole, all right.
Well, at least one of us does. What was it like? What was it like working with Josh? Josh is a unique guy. Josh, if you remember correctly, was at the XWF tapings. I'm the one who booked him. It was my idea off of Tough Enough.
Yes. And Bob Ryder booked Josh to be the first, in his opinion, the first, X division champion. That never happened. You ask Josh, he'll let you know that Josh is a headache. I think he'll be the first to let you know that. Josh is a freaking headache. Josh is a pain in the freaking butt. Josh is annoying. Josh is a douche. But with all that being said, Josh knows his stuff. And Josh is for all the hell that people give him, and Josh know I tell him that, but for all the hell that people give Josh, he knows his stuff, and he, much like you were in the XWF, this man wears a many of hats, yeah, that has continued to help Impact Wrestling evolve and to be where it is today. A lot of people don't know it, but it's just the truth of the matter. And Josh helped me out when I got there.
Yeah, I agree.
Commentator role, he helped me become a better commentator. He helped me to learn things that I didn't know, and I'm appreciative of that. And so yeah,
great.
So I got a place in my heart for Josh.
Great heel too.
But if I didn't have that place in my heart, yo, great heel. You think that's a work, brother?
No, that's
if
why
I
it's
didn't
so.
Have a place
that's
in my heart. It's natural. Exactly.
That's why
exactly.
It was so. That's why
and
it was so good because he wasn't.
Heart,
go ahead. Finish.
Go ahead, brother.
Oh, you're saying if you didn't have a place in your heart for Josh.
If I didn't have a place in my heart, did I say for Josh? Not for Josh.
Oh.
For Maddie. For sweet little Madison Rain.
Oh yeah.
If I didn't have a place in my heart for her, I would have been knocked Josh out. I would have cold cocked Josh. Do you hear what I say? Joshua, luckily for him, he's married to sweet little Maddie, and I have nothing but love for that child.
Yeah, she's a nice girl. And, yeah, it's definitely an odd couple for sure. And but, yeah, he was a great heel because he was playing himself. But most great heels are great when they're playing themselves. I mean, that's just the way it is. Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
When you saw that he was being turned heel, and that JB was coming in the booth, did you have any idea? Did you have any thought process that might be the end for the Pope in the booth? Or were you hoping that to keep it a three-man booth?
No, no. Oh, no, no. There was a lot of things going on with that, including good old JR, if you want to know the truth. But, yeah, I knew what was going on, even though it wasn't being mentioned to you or whatnot. I didn't think nothing of it other than the fact that they were making it a three-man booth. But when they started, the whole back and forth, you know, and Josh, now I'm sitting out here and Josh is healing on me. And then Josh is, you know, then Josh is getting into it with JB. And the people, I mean, your fan base, your social media base, they all want to see Pope get his hands on Josh. Because I'm the one that has to deal with Josh. I'm the one that's getting berated by Josh, you know, getting the smart remarks by Josh while we're trying to work and do our job properly. And all of a sudden, now JB is in the mix. And that just makes perfect sense, right? To put a non-wrestler with someone who had a little tough enough experience. I said, well, okay. And I just kind of went with it. And I kind of knew where it was going from them two in the angle. But it never made sense to me that they would go JB and Josh and not me and Josh, which would have been a proper payoff for that. It's kind of like, and I'll get back to that in a second. It's kind of like when Tyrus kept coming down to the ring. Tyrus did this whole thing for almost a whole year. He just kept coming down to the ring, just messing with me off the fly. You know, this wasn't a part of the show. He would come, he would take my coffee, he would drink my coffee, spit it back in a cup, he would come over and knock my head. Yeah, man, this stuff would literally piss me off. You know, he would come knock my headphones off while I'm trying to talk, my headset, and you know, sometimes it was calling camera. And so the fans were getting hungry to see Pope back in the ring. There's nothing wrong with Pope, you know, so they wanted to see Pope back in the ring. So it only makes sense that the writers pick up on this and say, holy crap, you know, the fans want to see Pope in the ring. Tyrus has been over there being agitated to him. Let's get Pope back in the ring and let's feed him to Bobby Lashley. Like, what type of sense did that make, and how did it help Lashley to have him to beat Pope, who's in the color commentary, who hadn't been in the ring for TNA for over a year or so? It's like, it didn't make sense. So I was kind of used to things not making sense with them. So it's one of those things, man. So I just kind of took it like it was.
When Ed Nordam bought or his company bought TNA and started Impact, and they brought Jeff Jarrett in and Scott and Sanjay and that. What were your thought process? Were you optimistic? Were you just going with the flow? And then, because shortly after that, you were gone, unfortunately.
Optimistic, because me and Jeff were sitting in the offices in Nashville, Tennessee, working out a contract that Ed Norton had gave the okay to go ahead and get my deal together. And that was the only holdup. We were trying to get a deal together. Because I hadn't, I didn't get what I was due, and everything kind of got put on hold after all the almost going under and Anthem taking over. So, at that time, everybody was just. I remember one time after one of the tapings, I just started taking pictures with some of the boys and girls, but we refer to everybody as boys. I started taking pictures with some of the boys, and we were all taking pictures and hugging each other because we just didn't know if this was going to be the last time that we saw each other. So when Anthem came aboard, it's just, you got to be optimistic. If you're not optimistic, then you shouldn't be there. So you want to hope the best for the company. You want to wish the best for the company. And I obviously did that every time. These situations came about. Every time I was there, I was optimistic that change was coming and better was around the corner. Once things started to get its flow and Jeff started to get in the groove of things and his position and whatnot and running things, the first order of business was to get myself taken care of. And in the process of trying to get that taken care of, the issues happened with Jeff and this, things just started going haywire, and it was like, okay, it's not coming together, it's a done deal.
Well, the good news is, as you said earlier, you were one of the smart ones that saved your money. So, certainly it wasn't, it was probably, probably not the happiest day of your life, but at least it wasn't like, oh my God, how am I going to pay my water bill?
Oh no, it wasn't a bad day either. This was something that had been going on and on. It's one of the things where you got to know your worth, brother. You got to know your worth too. So it's like I don't know what they told you, but it's one of the things where you either, if we can't do this, then I don't have a problem stepping back. I mean, it's not a must for me. I already see where they're going and where everything lies with them. And, with JB pulling, triple duty or whatnot, if that's what they want to do, then that's fine by me. I mean, it's either way with me. I remember when me and Jeff was talking, and I drove from. They had to get their tape out for Impact. They had to get their tape out, and I was stuck in New York in a snowstorm. And I brought this back to Jeff and Ed's attention when we were in contract negotiations. I freaking, because of the company could not put on hold because they had to get their TV out. There was no flights flying out of New York. I had to brave a freaking snowstorm, put myself in danger, drive 12, 14 hours from New Jersey to get to Nashville just so they can record. So we can fix the voiceovers or whatever. Yeah. So it was one of those things. If you don't recognize my worth, then I don't want to be there.
Yeah. I think between us, I think the writing was on the wall that there was going to be, that they were just had to cut the budget big time. And, you might have been one of the first because you had a contract, and there's so many others that either their contract hadn't expired or people like me that weren't working under a contract. But if you look back at what happened, it seems like it wasn't like an isolated thing against the Pope. It was the beginning of severe slashing of personnel, so to speak. So,
well, let me tell you something. There's a reason. Unlike everybody else whom they cut contracts or let go or whatever the case may have been, there's a reason there wasn't a write-up about me when I left. See how I said that? There's a reason there wasn't a write-up about me. Everybody else, there was a write-up about.
Care to
I don't know if you noticed that.
Care to
this person I'm going to explain and let you put two and two together. This person has left. This person, we wish them well, blah, 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 blah. Or somebody get on there and say, I have me and Impact that's come to terms, blah, blah, blah. There's a reason that they were able, they did that with them that way. And there's a reason I put my own accord out. See, there's a reason I wrote what I wrote when I left Impact Wrestling. It's called Own Accord.
Yeah, no, and it was classy what you put out there, and I was sad to see you go. Not thinking that I was right behind you. It was a short trip. At least you had a little time. It was a short trip for me, but it was fun to see the guys again and to get to know you even better. I like to say that it's an overused cliche, one of the class guys in the business, because they say it about a lot of people, but you are one of the class guys in the business, and I appreciate the fact that that you just gave us 2 hours of unbelievable stories and your life story while you're battling to keep your voice going. And I appreciate that you had told me you would give me the first podcast when you started doing them again. And you lived up to that, and I thank you for the kind words you said about me earlier, man. And I know that you have a charity, and I know you recently had an event for the charity, but if you want to talk about the charity and where people could go or how people could find you if they don't already on Twitter, anything you want to pimp, see how I said that? Anything you want to pimp at this point, please go ahead.
That's awesome. When I started my charity, I used that the old acronym, if you will, PIMP. And I still use it to this day, but I take away the pimp now. But we positively influence many people. And that's my motto. That's what I deal with. And I believe that's what people look at Pope as, a someone who positively influences people, a motivator, someone who encourages others to be the best that they can be, to go out there and make change, be the change that they wish to see in this world. And you can help be that change by going over to love-alive.org. That is my charity. We're going just hit our 6-year. We had our 6-year event where we reach out to disadvantaged communities. We help the homeless. We deal with shelter families, disadvantaged kids as well. And recently, just last week, this past Saturday, as a matter of fact, we had our 6th annual love drive, where over 300 plus people lined up outside. We gave them clothes. We had gloves because it's been cold in Florida. We gloves, gullies, socks, hygiene products for the ladies, you know, and for the men. And we fed them directly out of Burger King, giving them something that we often take for granted. You know, we go to McDonald's or we go to Wendy's, Burger King, or wherever it is we decide to go. And if we want to get something, we get it. If we don't want to get it, we don't. If we do get it and we choose not to eat it all, then we don't eat it all. We throw it in the trash. And one day I saw a gentleman go into the trash directly after a car was leaving McDonald's and tossed this bag into the trash. And when the car pulled off, I saw a homeless man walk over there and go directly in that trash, open it up, found something that was left, and started eating it. And from that moment, that is when I said, I'm not rich, I'm not a millionaire, but I have to be that change because it's something that was sad to see. So I wanted to give back and to help the best way I can. And I don't want people listening to this to say you're a good person. It's a good thing you're doing. I want you to be that good that you see. I want you to be the change, and I want you to join me. Join me by going to love-alive.org. Donate $1, donate $2. You know, I think we get 85 cents off of it. And but hey, it helped feed somebody. And like I said, to do the things that we did, it doesn't come cheap. A lot of times I've taken a loss to my pocket. That happens, but I expect it until we get to where we're trying to go. You can also find out more about that by visiting the Love Alive charity on Facebook. You can follow me at Elijah Burke on Facebook, and you can follow me at the Black Pope, D-A-B-L-A-C-K-P-O-P-E. POPE on Instagram and on Twitter. Dave, you are a hell of an individual. You are indeed a class act. I don't think that term is used quite often. I don't hear it used quite a lot, so I do appreciate.
Not about me, it's not. That's for sure. I think you may be the first, but no. Hey, mad respect, Pope, and we only got to be friendly for a short time, but I'll always cherish it. And hopefully we can meet up and take that picture real soon, because I want to put that one on social media on my page as well.
Yes, sir. Absolutely, man. I appreciate it, Dave. And I'm glad that I was able to keep my word with you. And I know you were going to bug the hell out of me until you got it. And I'm glad that we finally got it. I said, oh, shoot, let's get this thing out of the way.
Yeah, I won't bother you anymore, I promise. Hey,
No, you can't, brother. You can't. Bug me anytime. This was fun. I know we didn't get a chance to cover a lot of things because you and I both can run our mouth. But let's do it again sometime. And, let's cover some other stuff and get into some nitty-gritty things as well, you know?
For sure, for sure, for sure. Hey, feel better, and thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Dave.
Thanks again to Elijah Burke, the Pope. Boy, that was that fun. I had a great time. Always have a good time talking to old friends and new friends alike. And that was a blast. So I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. I'm going to go tonight and look and see if I could find any footage of the Ayatollah doing his tough man thing. And if I do, I'll post it on social media for you as well. But a big thank you to the Pope for sitting in under the weather, but an honorable thing to do, and just a lot of great stories. So I hope you enjoyed it. Got a lot of great stuff coming up. So if you have not already subscribed, be sure to subscribe. We'd love to hear if you have a review on iTunes or any of the media platforms that we're available on. Please feel free to check us out. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors to subscribe and download. City Ringside drops each and every Monday. And you can check out other great podcasts and about other all kinds of things throughout the spectrum. If you're enjoying what we're doing at radioinfluence.com, be sure to check that out, radioinfluence.com. Got to send out props to Jerry and Jason and the great job they're doing. So until next time, this is David Penzer. I'm still sitting ringside. Have a good one.
Follow David Penzer on Twitter at David Penzer. Also, make sure to follow the show on Twitter at Penzer Ringside. You've been sitting ringside with David Penzer on Radio Influence.
When you are looking for the latest news and notes going on in the world of mixed martial arts, the MMA Report podcast is the place to come. News from the UFC, Bellator, World Series of Fighting, and so much more. And also, we'll have interviews with some of your favorite fighters. The MMA Report podcast can be found on RadioInfluence.com, iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and SoundCloud.